It is now 5:30.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Engineering and Operations Committee for September 1st, 2022. If you would please stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get going, I'll make announcements. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Summit Circle Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public can also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in or the internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. Reminder to staff who are presenting online, please mute all your devices until you are ready to speak. Make sure your cameras are on and you are unmuted. When you are done with your item, please remute and turn off your cameras. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item two. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. Reminding the public they are attending in person that there are public comment cards, and I should see if you pick some up. Please complete and return to the admin to help expedite public comments. Procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I'll introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this on to the board or not. Any PowerPoint shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCB Water website. With that, we'll go on to item two, which is public comments. Any members of the public that wish to address the committee at this point?
Seeing none.
Thank you. Item three, real property activity presentation.
Yes, this item, we have Christina Jacob, our right-of-way agent. So you may recall back in March, the board approved some real property updates to the board policy. And one of the items in there requires us to provide every 6 months an update on the transactions that we've been doing for easements and so on to this committee. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Christina Jacob.
Thank you, Jason. Good evening, Chairman Cooper and committee members. I'm Christina Jacob, as Jason mentioned, the right-of-way agent here at SCB Water. And as Jason mentioned, as part of the board policy update that was in February of this year and then approved by the board in March, this is the semi-annual report of real property transactions to the Engineering and Operations Committee. Thank you. Thank you, Liz. Okay, next slide, please, Liz. So anytime pipelines are within privately owned property outside of the public right-of-way, we will need to have access to build and maintain those pipelines. it's because of this, we need the easements, and those projects where easements have been granted to us are on this slide. So since the board policy update, we have been granted 13 easements for the Castaic Conduit Bypass project, Castaic High School, the Dockweiler Mission Village Skyline Ranch, and phase one of the Tesoro developments. Pictured here are the easements that we acquired for the Castaic Conduit Bypass project, where the pipeline was not able to fit on the bridge. So it had to be located, located adjacent to the bridge, which happens to be on property owned by someone else. In this case, the other property owners are the City of Santa Clarita and private entities. Now, in your packets, the pipeline is not quite to scale. The pipeline is outside of the easement on here, but I promise you that when the pipeline is actually put in the ground, it will be within the easement. So not as depicted on this slide. We're also currently working with the county on a joint use agreement for pipeline easements within the county. The county is agreeable to give us equal rights in private and non-public roadways for easements within future developments. This is a win-win for both agencies, as we have been able to work together. The county has been able to clarify and confirm their conditions for developments, and the county will no longer force us to relocate pipelines at our expense. This is very exciting. Next slide, please. This license agreement may look familiar to you, as this was the geodetic monitoring station at our Sky Blue tank that was brought to this ENO committee in January and then approved by the board in February. And the license was actually executed in March, so it made it onto this list. In addition, we are currently in the process of routing for signature the Central Park Fourth Amendment and licenses for trails and staircase, which was presented at the July ENO committee and presented and approved at the August August board. So this concludes this semi-annual presentation. I'll be back in 6 months for activities during that time, but I know that I will be seeing you again within that time, but for the semi-annual presentation, I'll be back in March. And with that, unless there are any questions, I give this back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
Any questions from the public?
Seeing none.
Questions from the committee? Nothing? No. Very good. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
And you're up again, aren't you?
I'm up again, yes.
Okay. Now we'll do cell phones.
So I wanted to thank you so much for your flexibility with this presentation being moved. This was supposed to be at our last ENO committee, but I unfortunately had the flu-like symptoms that we have all come to know as COVID. So I was not in a state to present. So I'm happy to be able to present in a much better space this evening. So I'm still Christina Jacob, and the right-of-way agent here at Santa Clarita Valley Water. And a big part of my job is overseeing the wireless communication facilities or cell sites. Liz, would you mind bringing up the presentation?
One moment.
Thank you. So tonight, I will be discussing the cell sites, how they're managed, and also how we are improving the process. Next slide, please. So a cell site is a cellular-enabled mobile device site where antennas and electronic communications equipment are placed typically on a radio mast, tower, or other raised structure to create a cellular network. Water tank sites are popular locations because they are in centrally populated areas and are constructed at higher elevations. SCB Water currently allows rental of the tank site property for cell site locations because it benefits both the community and the agency. The cell sites provide the community access to different cellular networks, as well as providing a revenue stream to the agency's general fund of approximately $630,000 annually. The photo on the right is of a cell tower location on our Catala tank site. Next slide, please. There are currently over 20 carrier towers or antennae at 7 of our water tank site locations, with one future cell site planned to be installed at the Castaic Tank 1A. You can see on this map that the existing carrier locations are within the City of Santa Clarita boundary. So our existing cell site locations are at the Bouquet Canyon, Catala, Hanvi, Newhall Tanks, Pine Tree 3, Princess Tank, and then also at our Mystery Mesa site. Next slide, please. Effectively managing cell site locations requires coordination between the agency, the carriers, and the site managers. Within SCB Water alone, coordination of the department is key, with operations, finance, all of engineering services between engineers, inspections, admin, and right-of-way, just to name a few. SCB Water is approached by the carriers and site managers. This is not something that we actively seek out. Carriers or the site managers will contact us about a specific site that they're interested in, and then we determine if the space is available. For each cell site, the carriers generally provide the equipment, while site managers manage the towers, equipment, and agreements on behalf of the carriers. The agency oversees all activities, including plan review for new installations and updates, licensing agreements, installation oversight, and coordinates access to sites for surveys and maintenance. So you can see from this graphic that the coordination is required between all parties, which is really why we identified the need to create a standard process. Next slide, please. The legacy agencies started receiving rental income for cell sites prior to the merger in 2018. However, there was not a standard approach. Over the past year, engineering and inspections has worked closely with our agency legal counsel to improve this process by updating and standardizing contracts and agreements, which also includes adding the standard insurance language provided by JPIA, the agency's insurance provider. We also create deposit agreements for existing and future sites to reimburse the agency for staff time used when reviewing plans and drafting agreements, and converting to a license-based model, which gives the agency more control over the property on which the cell sites reside. For example, we require to have scheduled site visits so that we can monitor the work being performed and to ensure that our water facilities are not negatively impacted. Next slide, please. This slide shows the facilities in the past and what we are moving toward. So in photo one, it is of our Newhall tank site. Previously, equipment was allowed on tanks. Over time, this has proven to be a negative impact on the tanks. So we're having carriers move the equipment off of the tanks and onto separate towers. As you can see in photo two of our Bouquet Canyon tank site, and photo three of our Hanvi tank site. Next slide, please. This is our future facility and its plan. So the plan is something that we review. This is a future Verizon site at our Castaic Tank 1A. Verizon is working with the county to begin construction, which will begin later this year. We were able to work with Verizon and their site manager, Yukon, to enter into the license agreement and also the following up with the review of plans and coordinating site access. Next slide, please. And that concludes this presentation. If there any questions, I can answer them. Otherwise, I give this back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Very good. Thank you. Any members of the public?
Nope. Seeing none.
Director Bonner.
Yeah, I'm just curious what the negative impacts on the tanks were.
I'm actually going to defer to Josh Gilliam, who is our inspector supervisor and is on this call, as he has had a lot of experience with the negative impacts of some of the tank sites in the past.
Hi, Christina. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. Hi, Director Plenbeck. Some of the negative impacts up there were they were welding to the tanks, which were burning the coatings off the interior. When we go to coat the reservoirs, we have to work around the cell sites and shut them down due to the radiation coming off the antennas, UV stuff. And it's just really, really difficult to work around all their equipment mounted on our tanks to do our daily operations. So as they upgrade our sites, we ask them to remove them and relocate them on facades or on poles around the tank sites.
Are you having to wait to do that for when their contract expires, or you could just do that through the existing contract?
It can happen both ways, through the existing and when it expires. So if they're doing an upgrade on the facility, we can require them to remove it off the tank site. If the contract expires and we don't have the teeth to get them to move it, we will let them know we're not going to renew the contracts unless they remove it off the tank sites. And typically that's a pretty good persuader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just wondering if you had problems because they are all under contract and getting them to move them.
Yeah, each one presents its own unique challenges.
Director Rosofsky.
Ms. Jacob, if you can look at your slide 4, page 8 on the packet. I'm curious, this looks like a great revenue for our agency. Can we advertise spaces to the site managers? Or do we have to wait until they're interested in a particular spot and they approach us with a location?
Typically, our main concern is providing water to the community, it's not something that we actively advertise. But if there is a site that one of the carriers are interested in, we don't have the space or it wouldn't work out for some reason, we are able to provide other locations that may be able to be a better fit if it doesn't work at one of the sites.
Okay. So we've never provided maps to any of the site managers showing our tank locations or properties where they could evaluate whether they could have a cell tower there.
Correct. When the carriers approach us, they've actually done a lot of due diligence on their part. They have maps of coverage and where there are gaps in coverage. So they've identified specific areas, and those areas would more or less align with those tank sites. So they are aware of the areas that are owned by public entities, and then also where tanks are located.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Martin and Director Ford.
Thank you for the presentation, Christina. How are the fees determined, or perhaps if you already covered that, please excuse me for asking again because I didn't pick it up. How do we determine the fees for the individual site?
So as far as rental, we work with our agency legal counsel, BB&K. We work with them to look at the comparables and to see what other publicly owned sites and other agencies are charging, and we base it off of those comparables.
each individual site is reviewed as it comes up and looked at?
As it comes up, we'll be basing it on other comparable sites. Our BB&K has a lot of other clients nationwide. So they have a really good set of comparables when it comes to the square foot pricing. So we're able to work with them to determine a fair price.
How will license agreements be different from rental agreements?
So license agreements and lease agreements, a license, and this is the best way that I know how to explain it, is a lease agreement. So your typical rental lease agreement is very similar to when you're renting a house. You're renting a house, you have access to that house for the term. You can go in and out, you can update the property, you can paint the walls, you can set things in, you can set things in the ground. As long as by the end of that lease, you've removed everything, and there are certain constraints about when that lease can be broken. A license agreement is like when you are buying a ticket to a concert. You're buying a ticket to a concert. On the ticket, that's your license agreement. It says you can be on this site at this time, on this date, and you can't paint the walls, you can't affix anything to the concrete, you can't do anything other than buy food and beverages from there and merchandise, and then leave once that concert is over and you can't stay. And if you do anything at any time to violate that license, then they have the right to just terminate that license and kick you out of the concert. So very similarly, the license provides that protection of being able to terminate that license if the landlord sees fit.
Okay, thanks for that. That's all I have,
Director Ford.
Hi, Christina. Thank you for the presentation. Very informative. Question: do we have multiple carriers at any of the sites?
We do. A majority of our sites have multiple carriers. The carriers are currently AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. And at a majority of the sites, we have multiple carriers. And they have to be able to co-locate and make that space on that pole or on the property so that they're able to work together and not impede our access to the site.
Okay. And the pending cell sites, is the only pending one the Castaic Tank site?
So Castaic Tank 1A is a definite future site where we have a license agreement that is signed. We do have many carriers that contact us and start the feasibility process. And at some point throughout that process, they determine if it's feasible. We have the deposit agreements in place so that they're covering our time to be able to draft those agreements. And it's really dependent upon if it's a feasible site and if the license agreement is acceptable to both parties. So we do have some of those, but as far as any that are at the point where they're ready to go to a license agreement, then that will come to the E&O committee and then the board per the board policy.
Okay, and then at the Castaic Tank 1A site, you said that they are working with the county. Does the county need to issue a conditional use permit? Or
yes.
For the
correct
installation? Okay. And
I believe that has been issued and that they're through that and working through the construction.
So that's normally a condition precedent to us issuing a license agreement or a lease agreement.
They have to go through the process by whatever the agency, the local government entity is. So since this is outside of the city of Santa Clarita and within the county, then they have to get that from the county. And if it's within the city, then it has to be from the city.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Another, you know, I did several of these years ago, and they would come around with it was either a donkey or a mule. I think it was a donkey. And it's a portable tower that they can put up, and then they would see if they can get the coverage they needed for the area where you're at, because they know where their dead spots are. And then they would lease from us. And we, at that time, we used to put them on tanks, and that was a mess. You can't let them weld onto the tank because it ruins the coating on the inside. So they started using epoxies to hold that stuff on the tank. Well, sooner or later, you've got to paint the tank. You have to remove all that stuff so you can paint the tank. And they're saying, well, that's up to you to remove the stuff and, you know, make sure it's removed and pay for it. So, yeah, putting them on their own tower is much, much better. Very good. Agreed. Christina, thank you very much.
Thank you all so much for all of the great questions and conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, item 5, Mr. Payne.
Good evening.
Good evening, Brent.
Everyone. Good evening. So, Liz, can you pull up the presentation?
1 second, Brent.
Okay. Hope everyone's doing well. So, thank you. So, good afternoon, Chairman Cooper, directors. I'm Brent Payne, principal engineer. I head up the development group within the engineering section, and I'm here to seek your recommendation for the general manager to execute a contract with the developer for our fair share of the cost to construct a pre-stressed concrete tank at the Skyline Ranch development. So kind of a mouthful to start. Next slide, please. So you've seen this map before, but just a refresher, it shows our Dean Zone on the east side of the valley. The green is the existing Dean Zone area with 2 1-million gallon tanks kind of in the center near the COC Canyon Country Campus. The orange to the left is the new or the expanded Dean Zone at Skyline Ranch Development. Sierra Highway runs up the middle of the zone. Our existing zone, as we've said before, has a storage deficiency of 4.2 million gallons. And that was defined in a 2013, almost 10 years ago, water master plan that established storage criteria for the zone. The new Skyline development will add 870,000 gallons, or about 0.87 million gallons, which will take our total deficit to nearly 5.1 million gallons, actually 5.09 million gallons. So, our plan to make up this deficit is to build 3 new tanks in this zone. 2 tanks will be at the Skyline, and that's the upper blue dots in the upper left-hand corner. And then a 3rd tank will be at our existing tank site near COC, and that will be built in conjunction with the Sand Canyon Plaza developer. I might add that these new tanks will also help us to meet one of SCB Water's strategic goals, which is to build new storage to sustain water service during emergencies like brush fires, for example. So next slide, please. So this shows the layout of the new tank site at Skyline Ranch. The developer's providing the land with extra space so we can build a second tank at this site as a future CIP. The first tank will be built by the developer since they need that 870,000 gallons of storage for their development. We're going to piggyback on this by upsizing about 1.2 million gallons to get up to that 2.08 million gallon size, and then we'll contribute our fair share of the cost based on the volume ratio. Again, the developers providing the land and a graded pad at their cost. The site will also include a pump station and a disinfection facility. Those are on the upper left. And those facilities will be funded and built solely at the developer's expense, since they need it for the new development solely. So the this tank site is relatively close to houses in the new Skyline development, as you can kind of see in that aerial that's on the lower left there. And so, you know, we've chosen to make this a pre-stressed concrete tank that can be built without the hassle and blasting and of coating that's required for a welded steel tank. Plus, the as we noted in a previous presentation, the concrete tank offers a significant savings in the long-term maintenance costs since it doesn't require the expensive recoating every 15, 20, 25 years. So next slide, please. The developer will take the lead in constructing the tank under a master agreement that BBK helped us to develop. I just wanted to highlight a few key terms from the agreement. First, we want to be very clear on the items that they're solely responsible for, and that includes the land and the graded pad, the slopes, the retaining walls, the paving and electrical service. So that's a benefit to us. They're also required to furnish bonds for the entire cost, total cost of the tank project. The developer is bidding the project. They're also hiring and managing the construction contractor, as well as the construction quality assurance testing. They will pay a prevailing wage since we're contributing public funds for our share, and change orders are per SCB water policy. So that's some of the key developer responsibilities. SCB water's responsibilities, the facilities will be built according to SCB water standards and the approved plans and specs. So we have a key role in inspection. We'll also be taking the lead in permitting with the DDW, as well as final disinfection testing and acceptance. So next slide, please. The developer has actually already publicly bid the project. They received 5 bids. We reviewed these bids along with the developer, and we're recommending the award to Pacific Hydrotech as the lowest responsible bidder. Pacific Hydrotech is well qualified. They built 5 pre-stressed concrete tanks in the last 5 years, including a 3.7 million gallon tank at IRWD and a 3 million gallon tank at Santa Paula. They have DN Tanks as a subcontractor to do the specialty pre-stressing of the rebar, which is what gives the tank its enhanced structural integrity. We also had Cannon, who's the design engineer, prepare an engineer's estimate that we could use to compare with the bids. The Cannon's estimate was 6.09 million, which compares favorably with the Pacific Hydrotech bid. It's actually about 13% higher than the Pacific Hydrotech bid. So it's within the contingency that they assumed in today's market. If you exclude the sole source items for the pad and grading, Pacific Hydrotech's net bid was about 5.36 million. So next slide, please. This shows pricing for the construction support services. So the construction quality assurance testing is needed to verify that materials and workmanship conform to design specifications. And these services include things like compaction and construction or concrete strength, welding, and those kind of things. It's typically outsourced to companies with specialized staff and testing facilities. In this case, the developer has selected LGC Valley, which we know is well qualified, and the budget there is based on their proposal is $115,000. Construction inspections, we actually plan to perform this using our SCB water inspectors. We have good inspectors on staff. However, given the duration of this project construction, which could last 12 to 14 months, we wanted a budget to allow us to hire a third-party inspector in case we needed to do that partway through. So we budgeted that at 8% of the construction cost, or $429,000. The design engineer, Canon, will need to provide technical support during construction, and they provided a proposal for those services at $82,000. I might add that all these costs will be cost shared with the developer based on our fair share. Next slide, please, Liz. This table shows the breakdown of costs between SCBU Water and the developer. The developer will pay 41.8% of the cost. That's the 0.87 million gallons compared to the 2.08 million. SCBU Water will pay 58.2%. And Pacific Hydro Tech's cost, as I mentioned, is 5.3 million when you deduct the sole source items. So when you apply the percentage across the board to the construction and the construction quality assurance, inspections, engineering services, our share turns out to be 3.48 million. We budgeted 3.5 million in this FY22-23 physical year, but it's worth pointing out that since this is a 12 to 14 month construction period, that's going to stretch over into next year's physical year. Budget. So in the next budget cycle, we'll have the opportunity to budget to complete the construction and close out the project. So we don't anticipate spending the entire $3.5 million in this fiscal year. Next slide, please. So here's the schedule in brief. We're here today to seek your recommendation to pass on to the board for approval of the contract for our fair share. We'd like to take this to the board on September 20th to give the developer a good start in the construction. They've asked for that. And the estimated completion is November of next year, 2023. And final slide. So we're asking that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Directors, and I'll take a big breath here, authorize the general manager to execute a contract with TriPoint Homes Holdings, Inc. for SCB Water's fair share costs in the not to exceed amount of $3,488,546 for the construction of a 2.08 million gallon pre-stressed concrete tank for the Dean Zone at Skyline Ranch, including construction quality assurance and control testing, construction inspections, and engineering services during construction. So that concludes my presentation. Back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bain. Liz, are there any members of the public who wish to?
Seeing none.
Very good. Questions from the committee? Director Feinberg.
How did they calculate, or how did you calculate that it was 58% for us and 42% for the developer?
So that was based on the storage requirements. So based on our criteria for storage, for emergency and operations, and the Skyline development, the Dean Zone portion, that turned out to be 870,000 gallons or 0.87 million gallons. And we wanted to build based on the site and making up our deficit. We arrived at the 2.08 million gallons as the total tank size. So 0.87 into 2.08 is the 41.8% for the developer. And then our part is the remainder, which is the 58.2%. So that's how that was derived.
So is it just the tank is just storing what he needs for his development, and then we're picking up excess storage? So, but he doesn't require any storage of his own. I mean, we don't require the developer to have any extra storage, or is that included in the figure?
So the storage criteria in our master plan defines the storage that is required for their development, which handles which is based on max day demand. So they're not picking up our share of the deficit. If I understand your question, supplying everything we would need based on our criteria for storage for their development.
For their development. Yeah. Okay. So is that calculation available if I go back to the facilities plan or the master plan or what? I think it would help the board when this comes to the board to see how it got calculated.
It was the developer needed 800,000.
Yeah, I understand. You know, I know, but it's
so he's paying for 800,000 of the 2 million. So that, which is 41%.
Yeah.
And we needed to increase our storage for the plan that we did 9 years ago. We have a shortage of storage.
In yeah, I know. I just think it would be helpful if when it comes to the board, people could see that calculation. Because it's a lot of money. And, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know what is the other tank over there then for the next developer that comes along. I mean, the other tank site.
You know, if it expands or whatever, then there's room for another tank.
Because it probably wouldn't be too difficult to pull that out of the capital facilities plan or wherever that calculation is and just stick it in the board packet, right?
We prepared if I might jump in, a planning phase technical memo that went through the demand calculation and the storage calculation. I mean, it turns out to be a fairly, and that's the basis for calculating the demands and the max day demands, which included water duty factors and a peaking factor, was how the storage requirements were determined. So that's several pages of inside a planning phase technical memo, which we could certainly provide if you're interested. It's a pretty thick document.
I'd be interested in seeing that because I'm always curious. I know this has come up several times, and I'm always curious how our share gets calculated.
But once you work through the demand and the peaking factors, then it comes down to just a simple, ratio of tank size. And I might add that second tank, we asked them specifically to include enough land that we could build a second tank at our as a CIP project that we would have to pay for it to help make up the remainder of the deficit. So we turn out to be whole in the end.
And why do we have a deficit? Because we miscalculated or something in the first place? Why do we have this deficit?
So that goes back to the 2013 master plan when the storage criteria was first established. And so that was kind of taking a snapshot at that point in time based on, developments that occurred, many years in the past, and then determining, that we needed a certain amount of storage for emergencies, a certain amount for operations, a certain amount for fire, and fires based on the largest fire event in that zone. And so when they took a snapshot of that for that zone, that's when that deficiency was identified. It's kind of analogous to updating, a building code standard, and you find out that certain facilities are no longer in within the standard. So it's kind of analogous to that.
Okay, well, I would very much appreciate seeing that memo and maybe just the pages of how it was calculated. And I think maybe there would be other board members that would be interested in that too.
Okay.
Other questions from the committee?
Just a quick comment. Thank you for a thorough report and presentation. Detailed and all the information is there. It's in there. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I second that, Brent.
Good report.
Thank you.
One question, Brent. We say that we require them to, in their contract, since they're the ones that are doing the contract, to pay prevailing wage. How do we ensure they're doing that?
That's, I know on our CIP projects, we actually hire a firm like it's CCMI to monitor that with the DIR, because we usually don't get in the middle of that monitoring. Let me follow up on that particular item to see exactly how we're tracking that, I guess, in this case.
Actually, for the most part, I mean, we go to the DIR, we do a PwC 100 form, and then we give that number to the contractor. So he's actually required to submit the payrolls to DIR now electronically.
Okay.
And every now and then we may get a request to provide that certified payroll. So at that time, we will ask the contractor to provide that. We'll redact certain information like social security numbers, and then we'll provide that to the requester. But it's not something where we would actually just every month require it. It's something that we require the contractor to provide that up and upload that on DIR's website. So DIR is actually tracking it as well.
And we are reviewing the invoices from the because we're reimbursing since the developer is taking the lead with the construction contractor, they're paying and holding a retention. And then when we go to reimburse our portion for services that have been rendered, then we'll be reviewing those invoices. But we're not necessarily checking rates, although maybe we should be once they're established that they're paying the prevailing wage. But as Jason said, and thank you, Jason, we don't get into the DIR database.
I've been in these jobs where we're monitoring the certified payroll. When we have a third party do it, are they out there actually talking to field people and asking them what they pay?
So essentially, we typically hire consultants, like you said, CCMI, to actually go out there, monitor, audit, and they do surprise inspections, surprise audits as well. Yeah. But usually that's for grant projects that we are getting grant funding. So projects like this, or even other CIP projects that are not grant funded, we just have that requirement for the contractor to be basically comply, upload to DIR. But when we do have a consultant, they actually do go out there. And there are times they will catch the contractor, say, for example, using a laborer as an equipment operator. And that's two different prevailing wage rates. So then they will flag it out. They'll get potentially fined and so on. So they actually, there's a whole process for that too. So they do go out there unannounced and they go up and they actually interview whoever's out there. So they can walk up to an equipment operator and ask for what they are, who they are and whatnot. And if you find out it's a laborer, then obviously something's wrong there. So they do check on those kind of things. They random visits.
If not, it can fall back on us.
Yes. So that's why we do have like a consultant that does that. And then in those cases, we do actually require them to submit all their certified payroll. Every single pay request, we include all the certified payrolls that go with it. So for those projects, we do that to that level. But for a project like this or a regular standard CIP project, we typically would just follow the route where they'll submit it to DIR. If we get a request, we'll ask for it. And we can ask for it at any time as well.
Sure. Certified payroll doesn't catch those things like you said, like
the audits, the inspections, and so on. Yeah.
And the bid, I might add, the bid documents did require that they submit, just like our CIP project, a DIR registration number, and so in this case Pacific Hydrotech indicated that they would comply with prevailing wage and provided their DIR number and that registration and all that, so that all that checked out. So
okay, thank you very much, Brent. Very good.
Okay. Is this an item that could be considered for consent, or
I don't see why not. It's a
They can try it. Pretty simple. I mean, it's a lot of money, isn't it?
It's
$3 million.
Yeah,
I guess for you. So.
I think
it's a tank.
I know.
I mean, it's a quick presentation.
Yeah, but let's present it to the board.
Okay. Happy to do it. I just thought I'd ask. So. Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Item 6, Mr. Abercrombie, monthly office report.
Thank you. The report, as usual, is in the packet, item 6. Not really anything much significant changing from last month's report. Wells that are pumping, as is typical in the summer, are showing some decline in water levels. Interestingly enough, we're seeing still some increase in water levels in wells that are offline. Due to PFAS, slightly, barely, but still holding or increasing slightly. So I don't really see a lot of differences in things over the past few months. But if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Any questions from members of the public?
Seeing none.
Director Weinberg.
I wanted to ask you, the red line is the low and the high. But if it goes below that line, do then you change the low?
Yes.
So because, there's no way to know. Well, I guess we could see.
Well, you can look at the previous chart. I don't know if you're looking at the five-year version or the
If I'm looking at the five-year version, I could see the numbers.
When you're looking at the longer term version, that's showing for that whole history since the 80s, what the highest and lowest ever was, which it doesn't change a lot other than in like newer wells that have maybe just been put online in the past year, their high and low will just be close together probably, and until we start using the well, and then over time we'll see what it is.
Questions from the committee? Thank you, Keith. Item 7.
Yeah,
Jason.
The capital and CIP. Yes, the CIP, the construction status report is in your packet. I just point out a couple of things. We're wrapping up our second PFAS project on our Valley Center well. So we're very much okay with construction. They're doing some punch list items, and we actually have the res installed already. So we're just waiting for a DDW permit, and then we'll be able to put that one online in service. So that's coming up. Hopefully, they'll be this one. And then the other one, with the board approval that we
recently. How much water will that give us?
About 1,200 GPM. And then the other one that the board recently approved was the Santa Clarahami wells for the contractors. So we just recently had our pre-con meeting, a pre-construction meeting for that one. So they're going through material submittals, and that's going to be done by around next year. So you can see on the schedule here, it shows August 2023, so next summer. So that's our other PFAS project that's going on. But other than that, you can see all the different projects we have in construction. There's quite a few at the different stages. If you have any questions, let me know.
Questions from the public? Nothing?
Seeing none.
Questions from the committee? Seeing none, yes, we have a bunch of work coming up.
We'll do.
We had a period of a couple of years there where there was nice and quiet. Now it's back on a roll again. Okay, planning calendar.
Okay, so the planning calendar, that's also in your packet, item 8. You can see there, we have a few things coming up next month for the October committee. One would be the Lily of the Valley. It would be authorizing a service agreement. The other one is regarding our Katsella Pump Station Pipelines for planning services. And we also have there for our Skyline Ranch cost share and supporting new team's own pump station. And then we have some quick claims coming up in our next committee meeting. So with that, I mean, obviously, you can see in the committee packet, we do have quite a few items coming up next committee, and then the November committee as well, and December, so on. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
All looks good. No, we keep getting any more projects, we won't be able to read this at all, that's for sure.
Nope.
It might get smaller and smaller as we go.
Had to bring this along.
Any comments?
Yeah.
Very good. Any comments from the committee? Item 9, Mr. Abercrombie, general report on treatment, distribution, and operations.
Just a couple of quick things. I think at the last meeting, I had indicated we were kicking off our AMI replacement program. We had hired purchased meters. We had the committee authorize us to hire the contractor. And we were ready to go, but we were still sort of in limbo with the Bureau of Reclamation with regard to getting the notice to proceed for the grant. Their wheels were turning slower than ours. And so we had to put the contractor on a little bit of a hold. But I am happy to report that project did start this week.
Okay.
And so they are actually replacing meters. They're light crewed at this point. I think they only have a couple people out or whatnot, but they're bringing in heavier crews, and they have 4 months to complete the process. And so that should be well underway by the time we meet yet again.
How many meters?
Around 5,000. The next thing, Jason reported on it already, so he stole my thunder, but the Valley Center well, as he reported, is close to coming back online finally, and that's a good thing. We have, as he said, loaded the resin, run the well for sampling. Those samples are being tested as we speak. We hope to get results back, if not this week, next week. And then we anticipate, a permit from DDW within a week thereafter. So that seems imminent, and that is very good. And then the last thing I just wanted to sort of point out or remind the board, everybody has seen the notices from April, but we will have the facilities tour on September 30th. The one change from what we had planned to do was previously we were going to give a presentation at a board meeting, sort of a, you know, slide presentation of facilities so you could see more things and whatnot. That now is going to happen on the day of the tour. It will happen at Rio Vista before the tour starts. So from 7:30 to say 8:30 will be a presentation that Mike will provide with, you know, showing pictures of facilities and whatnot. And then thereafter, we'll head out on the tour. We'll last till about noon. So, that's my report.
Hi. Dana?
Hey, Director Orzowski.
Regarding the presentation, will we be able to get it in advance of that tour?
Yes, it will be in the packet.
Okay.
So whenever that goes out, we'll be prepared. So
excellent. Looking forward to it.
Yes, and they changed the dates of my meetings. So I'm going to be able to go on the tour too. So I'm looking forward to it. Seeing nothing else, okay, we'll move on to Jason.
Yes.
Engineering Services.
Engineering Services. There's a few updates. One, regarding staffing, we have a couple updates there. You know, as you know, Jim retired. We're going through a recruitment process for a new engineer. That's going well. So we're hoping that new engineer will be joining us end of this month, which would be great. The other one is we have a engineering technician position that will be backfilling coming up because we have a technician that's going to be leaving us tomorrow, actually, in our development group. So we're going to be recruiting for that position as well. So that's on the staffing side. We do have a presentation for this item as well. Brent's going to be providing a presentation regarding what we do on water availability requests. The engineering section, we do receive such requests, and he's been working on the process, and he's going to be providing a presentation on that process. So with that, I'll turn it over to Brent.
So good evening once again, Chairman Cooper, members of the committee. I'm still Brent Payne. I'm still a principal engineer here. This presentation is an overview of our water availability review process. So I'll start. Next slide, please. So we're responsible for determining water availability within our service area. This map here was taken from our 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. Our boundary is the dashed blue line, and on the outer perimeter covers about 195 square miles within LA County and a little bit within Ventura County. The shaded colors are our legacy retail service areas. Brown is the Newhall, what was Newhall County service area, but is now Newhall Water Division. The blue is Valencia. Green is the Santa Clarita Water Division, and then the pink is the LA County Water Works District number 36. The service areas are interconnected, but still separate due to DDW permits, and we're looking forward, hopefully in the near future, to a single DDW permit. Keith might be able to comment more on that, but as well as more interconnections as we prepare the valley-wide master plan. Our service area is a legal boundary for purposes of water service. Does not necessarily mean we have pipes in the ground throughout that entire service area. If a developer is proposing a new development in an area that does not have infrastructure, then they're required to pay to plan, pay for, and build that new water infrastructure for their development. So, next slide, please. So, what's the purpose of a water availability determination? Water availability is a first look at a proposed development. It's early in the planning stage, and it is to determine if we have adequate water supplies available to serve that development, as well as the infrastructure that's needed. So the process typically starts with a request from a developer as they're starting the entitlement process with the city or county planning. So the developer's first stop is really at the city or county land use agency. The city or county will then ask that developer to come to us to get a water availability letter to confirm, number one, that we know about the development, and number two, that we've accounted for that development in our water supply planning, like the urban water management plan. We also like to use this opportunity here within engineering to identify the need for new infrastructure so that the developer can include that infrastructure, such as tanks or pipelines, pump stations, in there as they work through the entitlement process with the city or the county. So that helps us helps them and us in the CEQA process. Water availability allows, as I understand it, allows the city or county to proceed with their entitlement process, but it's not representing a commitment at this point by SCB Water to actually serve the development at this early stage. And we probably get 20 to 30 requests a year, so two or three a month, maybe something like that. So some we may hear from and follow up with. Others may request it, and then you don't see them again. So next slide, please. So we've created a form to streamline the process. In step one, the applicant has been referred to us, and we take the call here in engineering, so we talk to them. In step two, we send them the form and ask them to complete the top portion, which has the project name, description, number of dwelling units or commercial square footage, that sort of thing, a site development plan, and then we ask them to sign that and submit it to us. And then in step three, once they've done that, in step three, then one of our engineers, I'll sign, and they'll review the project information and just identify some basic concepts and how we're going to serve the development. It's kind of a high-level screening analysis at this point. You know, what's the anticipated water demand? What pressure zone is it in? Is it going to need a tank or a pump station or a pipeline? And we use this, we do this just using readily available resources like the Urban Water Management Plan, for supplies and zoning, and our master plans for infrastructure. We may at this stage identify the need for additional planning studies, usually do, for the larger developments to better define the infrastructure requirements. And then in step four, we complete the form, and either Courtney or I will sign it, and we'll put an expiration date on it. It's usually good for 2 years. If they've not started the project in 2 years, then they need to reapply. And then step five, we return the signed completed form along with an attachment that's several conditions, disclaimers that BBK helped us develop. And then they in turn send that to the developer will in turn send that completed form to the city or county. And that allows them to continue the process in planning. Next slide, please. So this is a closer look at the form and the checklist we go through on the bottom section, which is SCB Water's portion. So section A, there's four sections. Section A is the service area questions, basically whether an annexation is required. So like a recent example is Tesoro, where a portion of the development was outside our service area or the sphere of influence, and they were required to annex that portion. Water Resources worked as well as the developer with LAFCO to annex the area they needed, which took about a year to a year and a half to work through that process. Section B looks at the infrastructure. Does it exist, or are we planning it in our CIP in the near future? And again, here we may identify the need for a planning phase to define the infrastructure we need, like a tank or pipeline pump stations. Section C is conditions, and I have another slide in just a moment to cover that. And then Section D is a place where we can actually put like a footage or of a pipeline. Let's say it's 2 miles out from our infrastructure, then this is where we'd say, yeah, you're going to need a new 16-inch line that's a mile long, and in order to, so it gives them kind of a heads up on that. And then finally, the signature by either Courtney or myself. So next slide, please. So I mentioned the conditions. So there's actually two pages of them. This just shows the first page, but we worked with legal counsel to come up with this list of sort of standard conditions that it's important for the developer to be aware of at this early stage of planning. They're pretty straightforward, but you know, needs to be in our service boundary, and if not, annexation is required. We almost always require the developer to fund a planning study. And for this, we request a track map or construction plans and approved fire hydrant map with fire flow requirements. That's kind of an important part. And the developer's, you know, on the hook to pay for that new infrastructure. Sometimes, like in the Dean Zone, we may cost share if we have an existing deficiency that we need to address. And then the developer is required to provide the land or easements for new tanks and pump stations and pipelines as required. So, and then in addition to the above, when the time comes, a little further down the process, the developer will need to pay all the facility capacity fees based on meter size, meter count. And then these conditions are really intended to keep us whole in terms of our, you know, our facilities and funding for new projects. Next slide, please. So, future features, you know, we used to use a letter format when I first joined, and when Courtney came on board, we adapted a form that he had used at Padre to help streamline that process, and I think it's worked well for us. It requires the developer to have a little skin in the game. He has to complete the form, sign it, and return it, and attach the site development plan. So that's good. It also gives us a checklist to work through for staff to work through. And we are planning sometime in the near future, hopefully, to add it to our website with instructions so that we could actually receive these online from the developer and help streamline the process a little bit further. And then at some point in the future, I mean, it's a fairly nominal effort to process because we're using readily available documents, but you know, it still may be worth charging a fee to cover our cost. It'd be a nominal fee, but that's something we're considering for future improvements as well. So kind of brief, but that's the overview. Back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Thank you, Brent. Any members of the public?
Yes. No comment? One moment, let's stop there. You may start your public comment.
Well, I'm just wondering what you don't understand about Santa Clarita Valley water, that you're going into another county and you already have yourself spread all over and other places. When are we going to bring this back to what it was supposed to be, Santa Clarita Valley water? And now you're talking about going way up into another county?
We've always
had that much water?
We've always been in another county.
What?
We've always been in Ventura County.
You've always been up there?
Yes.
Well, you shouldn't be. Well, that's why a lot of it should be changed. around here. It's getting ridiculous.
It's always been.
Well, not some of the recent ones you just added. Way out there in other counties. It's getting ridiculous. We need to get a board here that is going to look at serving Santa Clarita Valley as it was formed way back when. And I just see so much here that I object to. It's unimaginable. And if you're going to continue this, we should start some recalls or something to get this back to what it should be, instead of you just pouncing out and doing here, here, here. What advantage are you getting out of that? That's what I'd like to know. Where is your big advantage to want to do this? Is it at, it's just a stream altitude, I mean, attitudes on your part? And you're not making this really available to the public. Yeah. Tell me when you really did and they've ever approved this. You've never been elected before. When we have an election coming up in a couple of months, where I think at that point, this kind of thing will become one of the major issues, is that learn to do what you're supposed to do, Santa Clarita Valley, and not be doing all these kitschy little things out there. Who knows what you're getting out of it? What are you getting out of doing that? Your egos? It certainly isn't contributing at all to our service here. I'm a Santa Clarita, Valencia, ratepayer. And boy, you sure pick on us. And these things are going to be brought up in this next election, I assure you of that. And when you get around to it, this is just, hey, do you have anything in writing on this?
Thank you, Ms. Moltmeyer.
You're welcome.
Just to let you know, the maps have been public maps for over 50 years. The water agency has been the same size. So. 50
back years?
With that, we go to the last item, which is unless the committee has some comments. Director Wierzachowski?
Yeah, a couple of questions. So the water availability request, that includes water availability and infrastructure. Not necessarily availability, but whether it works or not. Is that correct? Let me give you an example. Yeah. Has the county asked or filled this out for... infrastructure availability for Camp Scott Scudder? Have we received such a request from the county?
So the first question, it is we do take the opportunity to not only look at sort of acre feet per year, which is the water supply, portfolio, or the urban water management plan covers acre feet per year kind of a thing. But we like to also expand it to include the infrastructure, so that, because we know the developer's starting the entitlement process, and we want to make sure that infrastructure is captured in that, and that they're aware of that. So even though it may be better defined in a planning phase, so that's the first part. So for Camp Scudder, we have not received a request from them.
Okay, understood. Thank you. And thank you for this presentation, and thanks for showing us copies of the actual form and walking through all the steps as shown on page 4 on your slide, page 138 of the packet. Jason, quick question: the technician that we lost, can you expand on that? Why did we lose him to another agency, or was it just he decided to leave us?
Yeah, he's going for a better opportunity for him. It's a publicly traded company. So out of respect for him, I don't want to get too much into details.
No, that's fine.
Company, but yeah.
Okay, and the new engineer that we're hiring, is that a junior engineer? Do they have an EIT or PE?
So he has PE. Okay. So he'll be a regular engineer.
Excellent. Yes. And then if any of our junior engineers, are we helping them with the PE examinations or?
Yes. So we provide, obviously part of our process, we have different vehicles. One is, on seminars training, we always promote and encourage that. So we do have a couple that's going for their PE. They have their EIT. So they'll take classes in that area or refresher courses to kind of help get them up to speed and refresh in those areas.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for your report.
Oh, thank you.
Your report.
Question for Brent. Brent, when a project comes in and you recognize it needs a water supply assessment, what does it do to your procedure and the schedule on your water availability form?
So I'm trying to get my video to start here again. I'm clicking it, but it's not starting. So the water availability normally that may come while they're in the entitlement process. So the EIR may still be in process. So we would identify based on the unit count or the mix, whether it's commercial and residential. We would identify the need for an SB 610 water supply assessment and note that on the form.
And then do you stop processing pending the issuance of the water supply assessment or approval by the board?
So that's actually, in the details of the, and I didn't go through all the detailed conditions, but that is a condition that it would have to, meet all those requirements. So the water availability is not really a firm commitment on our part to supply, but so we don't stop. We would issue that, but we would issue it. So they give us the first, we send them the form. They send that back, and then when we sign it and send it back, we send it with 2 pages of conditions and note that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Great, Mark. Real quick with Brent, on your last page of your PowerPoint, you have future features, and down at the bottom it says established fee for processing. Do we not charge a fee now for processing?
We have not been, no.
We have not been.
Yeah.
How nice. What's your intention?
I mean, we don't get lots, it's not like fire flows where we might get, two dozen a month or, a dozen to two dozen a month. We might get, a dozen to two dozen a year. And it's maybe a day's work to go through it. So it's not it's a nominal effort, but going forward, it might be worth capturing. So.
Okay. Thank you,
Director Plummer.
Yeah. I've seen the water availability letters when I look at project EIRs and stuff like that, when they're under the water supply assessment level. And quite often they expire and then the county's not watching, we're not watching. I don't know if that matters to us once the letter is expired and they haven't started building. Would that invalidate the other conditions on there? Because there are some pretty important conditions on those letters. Like they can't hold us liable if we don't have the water to supply them, and they can't hold us liable for water quality and things like that.
Somebody's watching because we've had several requests, fairly recently, where they've reached out and said, well, the one we had expired, so could you issue us a new one?
Well,
so
the public, though, not the county, because I went through something and they had one from 2016 from Newhall County Water District, and they weren't getting, it doesn't matter because you're probably just going to issue another one anyway. I'm concerned that they would have expired and then the conditions that you put on them are no longer valid. That's what I'm worried about. Because I think it's pretty important for the agency to have those conditions on there.
It is. And if it expires, then there's no...
It wouldn't matter then. But
there would be no commitment on our part either.
yeah, that's true, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Then we're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be good for a while.